Investigators, this is a lesser-known double murder case out of San Diego, California, where the convicted killer would attack young high school-age girls, including Chelsea King and Amber Dubois. After his arrest, Amber's mother was able to get into the holding area and face her daughter's killer.
You know, I went in and I did what the police told me to say. They said, told me to tell, ask him, walk me through your day and shut up. Me to shut up. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. I said, walk me through your day. And he just walked me through the whole day.
I recently sat down with Amber's mother, Carrie McGonigal, for this episode. It was the first time that I had seen her since covering the murder trial. I was a little bit nervous, not sure what emotions or memories this would bring back. This is a haunting case. This was a haunting case to cover, and I remember crying in my apartment after the details in the trial were released. At this time, Amber looked like my sister Jenny, back in 2009. I can't imagine what it must have been like for Amber's family to go through something like this and lose someone so young. So I'm thinking about all of this as I drive up to her house in Escondido, just outside San Diego. Hi, Carrie. Is that Amber right there?
That's Amber, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, I don't know where my
phone is. Hi, thanks for meeting with me.
Hey, no problem.
Carrie gave me a hug, and we went inside to the back patio to do this interview. I learned a lot of new details in this case, and her interaction with her daughter's killer is shocking. They spent 30 minutes together. Before we dive into the case, I want to let you know that the content is for mature audiences and still might not be for everyone. I also want to remind you that I have a special shout out to everyone who wrote reviews on Apple Podcasts. It really helps independent podcasts like this one get noticed. So please subscribe, rate 5-star, and write a review. Now, after the episode, I will share with you some true crime podcasts that I think that you're really going to like. And I have a huge announcement. More on that after the case. The murders of Amber Dubois and Chelsea King. Investigators, you're on Deadline.
From the Hollywood Hills to your ear holes, this is True Crime Deadline. A podcast discussing cold cases, murder mysteries, and completely random thoughts. Now, here's your host, a man who stands in front of crime scene tape and talks on the TV box for a living, Mr. Mystery himself, Matt Johnson.
And thank you for joining me for this week's episode. It's episode 10, which is kind of a milestone, and it's about a double murder case, John Gardner and his two known victims, Chelsea King and Amber Dubois, which takes me back to San Diego County. 3.3 million people live in San Diego County, and it's the second largest city by land in California. North of San Diego is the communities of Poway and Escondido, where this story takes place. Now, Poway is upper middle class with a medium home price of $750,000. Escondido is more working class with medium homes at about $500,000. Poway is known for its school districts, including award-winning music and athletic programs. There's a lot of statewide athletes and a few famous football players that come from that area, while Escondido is known for agriculture and 4-H programs. Escondido had some of the largest avocado groves at one point. I remember that. When you're driving on the 15 freeway, you can see them. And that's near some ranches and vineyards and the Paula Indian Casino as well. In 2009, Escondido was also the home to John Gardner. Now, we're going to talk about him first because he really should have never been let out of prison. He should have never been out. These girls should not be murdered. I also want to go over the timeline with you before you hear my interview with Amber's mom so that it all makes a little bit more sense. John Albert Gardner III is just pure evil. There's no other way to put it. He was born in 1979, his mother, a psychiatric nurse. She had put him on psychiatric medicine at the age of 6, and he was held in a psychiatric hospital for 60 days when he was 10 years old. As a student, he was labeled emotionally disturbed. In high school, he was convicted of trespassing, and at the age of 20, he was arrested and convicted for molesting a 13-year-old female neighbor. He had spent 5 years in prison and in 2008 completed his parole. But he shouldn't have. He should have been back behind bars because he was tracked with a GPS ankle bracelet and totaled about 170 parole violations. Too close to schools and daycares, prison grounds, he was suspected of delivering contraband, and remote areas, he was also tracked there, including the spot where Amber's remains would be later discovered. On February 13, 2009, 14-year-old Amber Dubois was walking to Escondido High School. Her Valentine's cards were in her pocket, she had money to buy a lamb for the 4-H program, and she disappeared. Her mom, Carrie, says that she was always reading when she was walking to school. She loved reading. She loved talking to people. She wanted to be a vet. But the San Diego County Sheriff's Office considered her case a runaway. I never got the clear understanding as to why, because she liked being home and never had run away before, which delayed the media coverage when they did that. Now, at the time, I'm a reporter for KSWB, the local Fox station. When I'm assigned the story, I meet up with Amber's dad, Mo Dubois, and we meet in front of the school.
We are doing everything we can to find you and try to get you home safely as soon as we possibly can. I love you more than anything in the world.
By now, the case has been picked up nationally. Amber is on the cover of People magazine. There are vigils and several searches.
Over the weekend, more than 100 people searched rugged terrain around Escondido, and still no sign of Amber.
We had teams on horseback. We had people out there with their personal dogs, you know, found nothing.
After a few months, there is less media coverage, and the case goes cold. Until almost exactly 1 year, when 17-year-old Chelsea King disappeared while jogging on February 25th, 2010. She was a Poway High School senior, star on the track team, loved spending time with her little brother, and loved sunflowers. Within hours of her disappearance, the news stations were on the story. I remember being at the command post that was set up at the Park Rec Center that morning. It was shocking to see how many people were there, already there, with the county, in response, which makes me believe that they had found something, maybe a bit of her clothing, that pointed to foul play. I remember her parents didn't want to talk to the media at first. So I talked to a deputy and explained to them how this would help get more coverage and help people understand why it was so unlike Chelsea to just run away. A few minutes later, the sheriff is walking out with Brent and Kelly King. Brent looked like he could hardly make eye contact, and Kelly was just unable to talk. I think that she knew that Chelsea was gone. We would later learn that while she was jogging at Rancho Bernardo Community Park around a lake area, she was attacked, raped, and killed by John Gardner. Volunteers, including Amber's family, searched for days. It was FBI divers that found her body in the northeast corner of the lake's inlet. Gardner was arrested 3 days later after DNA evidence was found on King's clothing and linked him to the case. In April, he pleaded guilty to the murder and rape of both Amber Dubois and Chelsea King. He strangled both girls. And because of a plea deal, Gardner was not eligible for the death penalty because he agreed to lead police to where he killed Amber and buried her body. Without that deal, Amber's body would have never been found.
More than a year after 14-year-old Amber Dubois went missing, a gruesome discovery in the rugged and remote area in North San Diego County.
Human skeletal remains have been positively identified as being those of our missing 14-year-old Amber.
The court case lasted for days. Live coverage was carried by all the stations at the time, and I was reporting from the front steps of the courthouse for both CNN, Fox News, and all the local stations around the country, including my own in San Diego and KTLA. I remember the rows and rows of satellite trucks, and it felt like the whole country was watching this one particular case play out in our neighborhood. I remember at one point just absolutely breaking down, watching Gardner and the court case play out on TV. I was home after my shift and just thinking about the innocent girls, and it was just overwhelming. I think about the case a lot, and when I decided to do this podcast, it was one of the first cases that came to mind. I had to cover it. I wanted to see how Amber and Chelsea's loved ones are doing today. Chelsea's family have created a foundation that provides scholarships, and they also helped pass what is called Chelsea's Law, which mandates life sentences for child molesters deemed at risk of reoffending. Brent King has agreed to do an interview with me for this podcast, so I'll keep you posted when that happens. But here's my interview with Amber's mom, Carrie McGonigal.
What do you remember about that day?
Oh, I remember everything about that day. When Dave called me and said Amber wasn't home yet, and you think she's at the farm, and when he went over there and said she never made it to school, I knew at that point that someone had taken her.
And you were so strong about that because, you know, they were partly investigating this as, you know, oh, they kept on saying maybe she's a runaway. Yeah. I remember that.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of delayed the news coverage.
It did. And the news, and you guys and the news couldn't cover it without the police backing it up as that she's not a runaway, which really sucks. I mean, really. I mean, I understand it now. Now, 10 years later, I understand why, because there are so many runaways, and we've helped so many runaways that I get why the news couldn't cover it. I mean, you guys would be 24/7 with runaways only. But still, it's, you know, I have mixed feelings about the whole thing.
And the other thing that kind of grabs me is she was so close to home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. She was half a mile from home or less. But I mean, I knew she wasn't a runaway. She would never run away. She liked being home too much. But yeah, it did delay a lot of it.
And I think it was a week later, we were out in front of the school, there was the vigils. You probably were getting no sleep, I would imagine.
Oh, I got no sleep. I got no sleep until class kids came in, and that was the first night of good sleep that I got when they showed up to help with this and set up the search center. It was the first night. Brad Dennis, who runs Class Kids search team, something about him just like relaxed me, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so hungry and I'm so tired, and I just and I'm like, I'm going to sleep. He's like, good idea, go to sleep. You know, I didn't like the vigils, of course, because it's for your missing daughter, and I hated the search center with a passion. Even though I was very grateful at all the people there, I wanted to look for my daughter. That's all I cared about, was looking for my daughter. So I got some bad report with, you know, people that were searching for her because I was, you know, maybe, you know, having a beer outside, trying to greet people, or, you know, doing whatever I could do. But it's a lot of controversy, you know. I mean, just people, if you haven't walked in these shoes, you don't know how you're going to act. And I've helped families that their kids have been missing, quite a few of them. And they all act different. And some of them, I'm blown away by some of them. I'm like, what, you know, I just sit there like, what are you doing? You know, when they're not even making any effort to look for their child. It's like, why am I here? Why am I putting in more effort than the mom or the dad?
How did you keep your family together during such tragedy?
I didn't. I left Dave. I had moved out. I didn't even take Allie with me because I just couldn't be a mom to her. It took me until Memorial Weekend. In 2009 for me to actually have her for a weekend, because I couldn't handle her, you know. She was five, mommy, mommy, and I was like, oh, why is she saying that M word? I mean, I just couldn't.
You shut down.
Yeah, oh, totally shut down, yeah. And spending all my time, you know, they told me they didn't want me searching, so I would search at night, you know, and I would be on the computer 24/7 because I was so sure she was alive that I would just be looking at the Craigslist postings and all the other trafficking kind of postings, and oh god, I'd spend hours and hours in that, and go after every psychic lead, and, you know, do whatever I could do to find her.
Did you think that the cases were connected right away?
Chelsea and Amber? No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Because she was supposedly spotted in front of the school, and it sounded like Gardner wanted to, he attacked people like in private areas, and I didn't think there was any way that they were connected.
Do you stay in touch with the King family?
I do. I see Brent whenever he's in town. And Kelly, not so much. She's a little more reserved, you know. And she doesn't come out as often. But, yeah, I talk to Brent all the time.
What is that relationship like?
Oh, we have we have a lot of fun. Brent and I are real close. I mean, we just... And Allison loves him like a father, my other daughter.
I'm sure that, it, you know, you guys have a bond that you don't want to have. But it's no one else can know what you have gone through and go through.
Well, I have that bond with like Brenda Van Dam also, and because you're in your own this club that no one wants to belong to, and so but I have that bond with a lady last year. Her daughter, it was a year ago on Mother's Day, her daughter was killed by another teenage driver walking. She was walking back to school and she was killed, and I reached out to that lady, and I have the same bond with her because I walked her through the first 30 days of losing her daughter and what the funeral would be like and what, you know, the things she would go through. And every day I'd like send her a text, good morning, welcome to another crappy day. And it's actually, she said, it's actually what got her through the first month was, you know. And she's like, she didn't want to go to the actual burial. And I'm like, you don't have to go. No one says you have to go. The girl who died had a twin sister. And she goes, I need to be there for my other kids. And I said, then go and stay in the car. You don't have to get out of the car. You know, it's your right to do what you want. And she ended up getting out of the car and going to it and stuff. But I like helping other people like that. I mean, not only does it help me heal, it feels good to be able to reach out and walk someone through their horrible first year of losing a kid.
What have you always wanted to say or thought about that was never really reported about at all?
You know, I think you guys covered everything that was reported about.
It was a national story.
Yeah. The things that bothered me the most about the whole thing was, one, that the trash wasn't picked up. You know, when someone goes missing, a kid or whatever, they segregate all the trash and they put it a cellar within a 3 or 5 mile radius. They take all that garbage and they put it somewhere, and then if they have no leads, they actually go through that garbage, and they know where, you know, they have it totally separated to where it came from exactly, more or less. That really, really bothers me, because they would have found Amber's cell phone. They would have found, you know, they would have found her stuff. They would have found her iPod, her backpack, and some other stuff.
How were you able to face him?
Oh, that was easy.
That was easy.
Yeah. I was just so happy that I was getting what I wanted, and I wanted to know the truth. And people say, how do you believe, you know, how could you believe it? But I believe him. Only because he told me things that only Amber would do or say. So I know, you know, he was telling me the truth.
Was it like looking at evil?
It was like looking at evil when we were in the courthouse the first time he was brought out, when he was arraigned or whatever it's called. What's it called when they're first brought out?
Arraignment, yeah.
It is? Okay, yeah. That was like looking at evil because he was staring directly at me the whole time, and I was just like, why is he staring? I was with Brad and we're doing our search and rescue training, and I'm like holding his hand, I'm going, why is he staring at me, you know, like trying not, I'm like, oh god. And it was funny because the police thought he was staring at them, and then later he said, I couldn't stop staring at you in the courtroom because, you know, you look just like Amber. And I was like, no, Amber looked like me. And he didn't get that.
Have you ever talked to him again?
No. However, my daughter seems to want to talk to him. And I
really,
yeah,
why?
I don't know, and she doesn't know. I said, well, when you're 18, you can do what you want, but I don't, you know, I don't know. She doesn't know why. She just has this desire to talk to him. Hopefully, it'll change.
Did you have a conversation with the Kings before? Because it was what ultimately kept him from getting the death penalty was agreeing to talk about your case and your daughter's case.
Correct.
So was there a conversation before they made that decision, or did they just make that decision and then tell you?
There was not a conversation before. I still did not know that it was related, and I would have never known had they not agreed to take the death penalty off. They would have never told me. So to this day, I would have still been looking for the person. So no, we hadn't discussed it or anything. And the reason that I just found this out a couple weeks ago, one of the reasons that they said okay was because he was supposed to be put into general population within 2 years. And I don't think, I think to this day he's still in solitaire. I told Brent, you need to go after that, find out why he's still in solitaire. Put him in general pop.
What was your reaction? So it was almost a year later that Chelsea went missing, right? So what was your reaction?
It was over a year.
As you know, a mom that has a missing kid, and then you're seeing this on the news.
Oh, right away.
What was, did you reach out to them? Did you, what did you do?
Well, at first I got pissed. I mean, that it was such a huge story so fast. And I was like, what the, you know. And then, but yeah, I reached out to them. I went down there the next day, and some of my team members went down there, and we helped them set up their search center and everything. And then the next day, I think I got a call from Brent, and he said, I got a call from the sheriff's department who put me through to Brent, and he said, I just got to tell you, I love you. I don't know who you are, but I love you. Your daughter's missing, and you're out looking for mine, and you're just amazing, and I just love you. And I'm like, okay, thanks, bye. Mm-hmm. And then I showed up at the search center, and everyone kept calling me Kelly. And then I turn around, what? And then, so then, of course, that whole thing goes through your mind, like, is it something to do with, you know, Kelly and I? Because, you know, we kind of resembled each other back then when I had red hair, not purple. And then looking at the girls, I mean, they look a lot, they're very similar, you know, with their eyes, there's, you know, I mean, you could tell it was a person that was after, like, the same type of girl.
I have to tell you, like, that's what I always talk about when we talk about news stories and selection and what we should be covering and all this and that, because there's only a limited number of reporters at every station.
Yeah.
And it's something that I always bring up, and your daughter's case, is, Amber, is always the example. It really bothered me how, there's no right way to put this, there was such a big response for Chelsea that morning, mm-hmm. and then it took a week for us to start reporting with Amber.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. But Amber's part of the reason there was such a big response, because it was just past the 1 year. I don't think that they would have got that kind of response had not Amber not been missing for a year.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like, it was just right after the 1 year anniversary, and then another teenage girl goes missing, you know. That's why they responded. And I've even talked to some of the deputies and stuff that were on the case, and as soon as that got hit, they said Amber went to mine, and they were like, oh, you know, what the heck's going on? Could it be a serial killer?
Do you think that there could be more victims that we don't know about?
I don't think so. From him?
Uh-huh.
No, I don't think so.
Because he was in jail, and then mm-hmm. he had the tracker on, and that, all that.
That did a lot of good.
Yeah, well, what? Was it off, like, 4 months?
200 and some odd violations while it was on.
Right.
Yeah. So a lot of good that did. I mean, he would have been back in prison. And it really drives me crazy with the SDG&E guys that they saw, like, that they saw, you know, they were coming down and they saw Amber and everything and him, and they didn't even, you know, put two and two together that, hey, maybe this is, you know, the same girl or whatever, even though it was 30 miles away. That's another thing parents or people got to know. You know, if you see something that just looks funny, call the police.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. Call the police. I mean, I do all the time. If I see someone out of place or walk in the neighborhood, I call, because they have to have a reason to question them.
And, you know, most abductions, they're not going to stay in the area where they were abducted.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, one of the things that Carrie and I have never talked about before was her encounter with her daughter's killer, John Gardner, after he was arrested. How she got to spend 30 minutes with him when he was behind bars, and what they talked about.
I had to use the bathroom so I could probably throw up before I went in to see him. And then they asked me to do him a favor and not to upset Gardner, because they have to deal with it afterwards. I said, I'm not going to upset him. I just, you know, and they said, well, we saw what happened yesterday when I was there and the whole frenzy with his mother. I mean, I went down there and Tony had mic'd me up, and I went up and I said, can I have your visit? And the mom wouldn't talk to me, and her friend actually like pushed my shoulder. And I told her not to effing touch me or something. And the mom's like, don't touch her. And I'm like, I just want to know why your son killed my daughter. Can I just have your visit? And she wouldn't let me. And then I just left after that, because I'm like, okay, it's done. And I left. And I guess all the news stations went down there, and they had to get her a police escort out. And I guess it was pretty bad. Anyway, so they said, we saw what you did yesterday. And I said, I wasn't getting what I wanted yesterday. So I went in and I said, sorry to upset your mother. And he said, I don't care what she has to say. And I said, okay. And then I just told him to walk me through his day. And he walked me through his day. I kept quiet. I didn't ask many questions. When he got done, he said, okay, I'm ready. At the very end, he said, okay, I'm ready for you to tell me, you know, how much you hate me and what a piece of shit I am and all that. And I just hung up the phone and I left. And I walked out of there with such great relief, with such a calm over me. It was like a high. It was a high. I mean, I was just so giddy and so happy and just so, all the stress was just gone.
And it, why?
Because I knew he was telling me the truth, although people would say, yeah, right. But the things he said to me, I know my daughter. I mean, all the way down to the station, you know, she asked him to put on 103.7, her favorite station. I mean, stuff like, you know, just little things like that. I knew he wasn't making it up. And so I was relieved. It was like I had closure. I was able to write my victim impact statement and make it about Amber and not about what a jerk he is or whatever.
And you were saying that, you know, you forgave him, which is more for you, right?
Yeah. It was so that I forgave him because I had to live my life. I had to be a mother to my other daughter, a wife. Well, I wasn't a wife yet, but I had to be a mother to my other daughter, and I had to be able to function in society, and having all that hate and all anger and everything, I just couldn't function.
Another thing that's very unique to this story is how the families paid tribute to their daughters, their loved ones. Chelsea's family started that scholarship foundation and a run in her honor and passed the law that I was telling you about high-risk sex offenders staying behind bars, while Carrie ran a search and rescue team, a nonprofit with her dog named Amber after her daughter. And they were very successful in locating several people, including a missing nursing student from our area. Here's a clip of me talking about that case on the news.
The search continues this morning in the Bay Area for a missing Mira Mesa nursing student, Michelle Lay. Even though police believe that she may be dead this morning, her family isn't giving up hope. And now the mother of Amber Dubois, Carrie McGonigal, is joining in the search.
Talk to me about how, like, she lives on. You have your search and rescue.
I still help people. If the family, and they still contact me, if a family calls me and they need help, I'll still get some teammates together and we'll go look for them. I didn't want to do all the paperwork and all the nonprofit stuff, and it was overwhelming, especially so soon after they found Amber.
But you had some success. Nursing student,
we
right?
We found the nursing student, and then we tracked the runaway a couple, 6 months ago in Escondido, which was a great feeling.
Everyone that's listening to this podcast, what do you want them to know? Like, what is the message of hope or help or do?
If you have a child who's missing or a loved one who's missing, you have to be their voice. You have to be the one that keeps their face out there. The police can't do it, especially LA and the big cities. They just don't have the manpower to do it. You might think that you're calling the police too often and, you know, they're not getting back to you while they're trying to do their job. However, they owe you that respect to call you back. And so you need to continue to stay on them and call them and call them until that you get the answers. One of the best things Escondido did was get a liaison person to help with me, and she became my best friend. We talked every day, Beverly. She wasn't a sworn-in officer, but she did everything, you know, for me. So, I mean, really, you know, flyers and just keeping your child or your loved one's name out there is really the most important. And even though some news won't pick it up and stuff, there's other ways, social media, everything, just to, because if that person's missing, they could be anywhere in this world. Mm-hmm. And someone knows something.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
Today, John Albert Gardner III is serving 2 life terms in prison without the possibility of parole for the rape and murder of Chelsea King and Amber Dubois, with an additional 50 years for prior convictions, violations, and another attempted rape case. Gardner has never appealed. Now, inside Amber's mother's home is a tree with Amber's pictures. I'm going to post video and pictures of that, and news clips of me covering the case on my website. So that's truecrimedeadline.com. And I'll post some stuff on Twitter and Facebook as well. And also a bonus, I'm going to share with you something that I found really touching when I visited Amber's mom. Inside Carrie's home is a shrine with pictures of her daughter and Chelsea King. Because if it weren't for the generosity of the King family after Chelsea had died, we may still never know what happened to Amber. Investigators, until next time.
Thank you for investigating True Crime Deadline with Matt Johnson. For more information about the podcast, visit truecrimedeadline.com. And remember, all tips regarding a case should go to the police. Until next time.
Mr. Gatsby, want a cookie? Good boy. Now, a post-episode announcement. I'm really excited. So remember, I was up for an Emmy with the Television Academy for a report that I did on the DNA Doe Project, which was also the subject of a Case Break episode that I played last week. Well, drum roll, I won.
Now for Outstanding Crime Social Issues News Story. And the Emmy goes to DNA Doe Project.
But I would like to thank my beautiful mother for supporting me in my entire career. And she's my date tonight. And thank you to those that are the true crime fighters. The DNA Doe Project, this is for them.
Pretty amazing that I was able to take my mom as my date and for her to be there and see that. Now a shout out to investigators who wrote reviews on Apple Podcasts. Soccer mom Heidi says that she loves the podcast and she likes watching me on the news in LA, which is pretty awesome. Thank you. And she likes the exclusive interviews that I get. So thank you for that. LS32 said that they binged, listened to all the episodes and they can't wait for more. Well, I don't think that you're going to be disappointed. We have a lot of great episodes coming up over the next couple weeks, so please hit that subscribe button. And again, writing reviews really helps independent podcasts like this one get noticed. It's easy. It's free. Just hit 5 stars, subscribe, tell a friend, write a review, and include your real name if you're a podcast host, because I want to give you a proper shout out. And speaking of podcasts, I am excited to tell you about a couple that I just found. One is called The Devil We Know, and the other is The Murder in My Family. That's a true crime podcast with emotional interviews with loved ones of murder victims from a host you already know.
This is Mike Morford. You may know me as co-host of the true crime podcast Criminology. I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, The Murder in My Family. In each episode, I discuss a murder case and include an interview with a family member of the victim to discuss the aftermath of the murder. Some of the cases I cover are well known, and others you probably haven't heard of. And I have several episodes currently available for you to binge on, including episodes about the Delphi murders, the Golden State Killer, and the Colonial Parkway murders, just to name a few. Here's a small sample.
Bill Thomas is the brother of Kathy Thomas, and he agreed to talk with me about the murder in his family.
Well, Mike, at the risk of sounding like every other proud big brother around the world, Kathy was an amazing person.
And one thing I wanted to get across is how important it is that the victims that I'll be talking about in these cases aren't just statistics. You know, they were real people. They're more than just murder victims.
For me, knowing that he has a family and that he gets to see his kids every day and that he gets to be there for his kids growing up, like, it's not fair. He was the most funniest man I've ever met. He was everybody's friend.
New episodes come out on Saturdays, and you can find The Murder in My Family wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe today so you don't miss an episode.
So you can find them and us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere where you binge. Now to the other podcast that I told you about, The Devil We Know, an American true crime podcast that brings real-life horror stories to life about people who were living double lives.
The neighborhood is unsafe, the streets unlit. While others sleep soundly, you lie awake because you know the truth. You know that, no matter where you go, there's always a chance that a monster is in your midst. The darkness that runs deep within our own veins, the evil found in even the sweetest of souls, sometimes comes to light. And when it does, the result is a person that takes on that evil, that wears it proudly, and becomes part of the darkness itself. I am Aaron from Devil We Know podcast. And on our true crime show, we dive into the scariest corners of our past and present to reveal the devil we know. A father, a mother, a brother, a sister, and anyone, anywhere who hides in plain sight, living a life of bloody secrets while living just next door. Come check us out and hear the chilling, true stories about the devils we know.